Welcome to Raw Talk on M88. Call in with your questions or comments. Toll free 1-866-730-4921. Or submit your question to Dear DJ at M88.org. Now, it's time for some Raw Talk on M88.
And welcome to Raw Talk here on M88. Nice to have you joining us on a beautiful Sunday evening. It's feeling more and more like spring every single day, wouldn't you say, Mandy?
I would, definitely.
You know what? It's nice to have you back.
Thank you. You know, it's been kind of weird not being here for the last, 2 weeks?
2 weeks. 2 weeks I had to do this all on my own, and I just wasn't used to doing that, and it was very discombobulating. So.
Really? After how long have you been doing Raw Talk, yo?
I know, I've been doing it for a while, but still, you know, it's nice to have you here. It's nice to have someone else to chat with. So
thanks, yo.
When you weren't around to chat with, you know, I was left talking to myself again, and that just isn't as entertaining.
You do that at your desk all the time.
I know, but it's different when it's on air.
Okay, gotcha.
Because I have to be somewhat coherent when I'm on the air. Somewhat coherent, at least as much as possible. Well, tonight we're going to talk a little bit about the male species. You know, you and I were just talking about that, how some people look, it's not the male species.
It's a gender. No,
like,
it's a whole different thing.
Anyone who spent any time in the company of men and women understands that it's totally different species. We might as well be from different planets.
Men are
from Mars, women are from Venus. If you ever had a chance to read that book by John Gray, he actually had some very interesting insights that I thought were right on. So.
I've never read it.
Really? No, it was actually pretty interesting. You know, most people are like, oh, well, he's not a Christian. What does he know? Like, well, he has some very good insights. And actually, a lot of the stuff, whether he realized or not, went right along with biblical principles when it came along to relationships. So I thought that was very interesting. But we're not talking about his book tonight. Actually, we're going to be talking with Leslie Luty, a good friend of ours. She's been on the show before. She's well known for the book When God Writes Your Love Story. I was going to say romance, but love story, romance, they're both the same thing, but not the same title. But Leslie, thank you so much for joining us again tonight here on Raw Talk.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's great to be back.
Yeah, it's good to have you back. And why don't you just refresh people's memories about who you are really quick and just get them reacquainted with you before we just roll on in.
Well, my husband Eric and I are probably most known for the book you just mentioned, When God Writes Your Love Story. We wrote that book about 10 years ago. In fact, it's coming, the 10-year anniversary is coming up, and we're going to do a re-release of that book and expanded edition. And that book has become sort of like a relationships classic in the Christian culture, kind of surprisingly to us. We never expected it to hit the nerve that it did, but it just sort of painted a picture of what a God-written love story looks like instead of Christians who are kind of stuck trying to build a relationship the way that everybody else does, but maybe tack on a few higher morals because they're Christians. This is a book that introduced the concept that God had his own way of building relationships, and it's so far beyond what the world offers. And so my husband Eric and I have written several books since that one and spoken a lot around the country, and I've written a couple books for young women, Authentic Beauty and Set Apart Femininity, which I think we talked about last time when I was on the show, about how a young woman can really live truly set apart for Christ in this culture where the pressure to conform is so intense. And so I have a website called setapartgirl.com where we have thousands of girls come every day who just really hunger for that set-apart life. And this new book, Answering the Guy Questions, that we're talking about tonight is just sort of taking the set-apart life and specifically applying it to relationships with the opposite sex from the female perspective. How can a young woman relate to guys in a Christ-honoring way? So that's what the book is about, and I'm really excited about it.
Awesome. Well, yeah, that's, like you mentioned, the last show that you were on, Set Apart Femininity, was, which actually, that was my first show doing Raw Talk ever. So that was pretty
cool. Oh,
wow. Yeah. Great. Yeah. So it's nice to see you on the show again, Leslie.
Yeah, you too.
Thanks. But yeah, so let's kind of dive right into this. One thing, I mean, you're talking about the first book that you guys wrote, and near the end of this book, you kind of touch on that again is you know, having that happily ever after, the fairy tale relationship with a godly man. But through most of this book, you really dive into what a godly man looks like and how we, our role as women, how we can help guys out with that. First thing I wanted to kind of touch on tonight, you talked in the very beginning of the book about counterfeit manhood. And you kind of hit on a couple things. You talked about metro manhood and animal manhood. And
right.
Before we go any further with this, can you define those real quick? Just that way we can use those terms later on.
Definitely. Well, I think young women really struggle with, at least the thousands of young women that email me and write to me, really struggle with the concept that they've dreamed their whole entire life of a prince charming, a knight in shining armor who's going to be sensitive and heroic and protective of them and win their hearts and be tender and be a gentleman. And then they sort of encounter the manhood of the culture, and for the most part, their hopes are very much disappointed. And a lot of guys, even Christian guys, their version of masculinity is so shaped by Hollywood and the media and their peers and the standards of this culture, which are quite low. And so girls are really struggling with disappointment over, am I ever going to find a guy that's even close? I mean, let alone maybe not a fairy tale, but maybe just a guy who's like a step above, you know, Beavis and Butthead, or, you know, a step above just this warped, perverted thing that we see all around us. And two of the biggest, what I call counterfeit versions of masculinity, that are very prevalent today. One is metro manhood, guys who have become sort of feminized in their attitude and in their demeanor and the way they dress. And, you know, guys have even started wearing girls.
The girl pants.
Yeah,
girls'
Let me just say, I don't get that, and I think it's a little bit creepy. I just wanted to put in my two cents with that real quick.
I say that.
Sorry to interject, but I just had, to speak out on that.
I'm glad we could hear the guy's view on that, so that's good.
That's just a little bit weird to me. I see that, and I'm thinking,
it is amazing how common it is, especially among high school guys. It's just starting to become almost the norm. Like, you used to see guys on skateboards in really baggy pants. Now they're in skin-tight, you know, women's jeans. And it's just, it's this idea that, you know, the masculine side of a man is no longer popular in the culture. And it's something to be sort of, you know, women sort of got tired of the caveman version of a guy. And they wanted to make guys more into women. And I think this is sort of the result of that, where guys, they feel bad about even having a masculine side, and so they kind of just become effeminate in the way that they act, even though they might not be gay. They just have feminine qualities. They dress and act feminine. And even though women, you know, complain about guys and how, you know, they're gross, or they're, you know, they're just not sensitive, they don't have manners, or they should have better, you know, hygiene or whatever it is, when a guy loses his masculine side and he becomes, instead of a protector, just sort of a self-focused, egotistical metro guy, it's nothing like the fairy tale that the girl always dreams of. And she's left looking at this guy going, where's the knight in shining armor? Where's the strong protector that I've always dreamed of? And so metro manhood is very, very popular, and sadly, even among Christian guys, it's something we see really, really often. And then the other version of masculinity I talk about in the book is animalistic manhood, which is basically just really allowing your sex drive to lead you as a guy. I was invited inadvertently to be a guest on a radio show a few weeks ago, and it was ended up being just a podcast of these two guys who were just sat around telling pornographic jokes and sexual jokes all day long. And as soon as I realized what it was, I hung up on them. But
good for you.
I just realized, how could two men, you know, two grown men, make their living sitting around all day long doing nothing but spouting obscenities and talking about sex in these, you know, debased and perverted terms? And it just sort of shows where our culture is at. And, you know, a lot of times metro guys and animalistic guys are blended together. You don't necessarily have to be one or the other. Mm-hmm. But those are sort of, you know, girls feeling like guys look at them as sex objects instead of as women is a huge complaint that I hear, and a huge frustration. And so my point in the book in bringing those two things up is that this is not what God intended for guys. God has something so much better for guys, and it's a lot closer to the heroic manhood that most women have always dreamed of. But it's easy, as you look around at the guys in this culture, to just think this is normal, and this is all I can ever expect, and this is what I have to settle for.
Right.
I suddenly feel very unique, because I hear you talking about that, and I'm thinking, well, you know, the animalistic side, and you're like, but, you know, that you just like to grunt just because it's funny. And the metro thing, you know, I totally don't get, and I'm thinking, wow, Well, no wonder I don't feel like I fit in with today's culture, because I don't get either one of those. I'm totally clueless.
We need more guys like you.
Oh, well, thank you. But we're a rare breed, I'm afraid. I grew up on Cary Grant and stories of King Arthur and the Knights of the Round. I'm reading The Three Musketeers right now, actually.
Yeah, tell me about that.
Yeah, and, you know, it's actually interesting. Reading The Three Musketeers, although they're not necessarily model citizens, the amount of emphasis they put on honor and mm-hmm. dignity
right.
and manners and making sure that you are not offended in any way, any slight, especially when it comes to a lady. It's so entertaining to me, because I'm thinking, yeah, that's right. Yeah, let someone say something about my wife. I'll pull out my lightsaber
sword?
And, well, I don't really.
Lightsaber.
I
You're
do
mixing
have one.
Two stories.
No, but I have a lightsaber. See,
okay.
I don't have a sword. No, actually, I do have a sword. I actually have one of each. I just don't get to use them very often, because no one dares to insult my wife, and that's a good thing.
That is great. I love what you're saying about the honor and the dignity aspect, because when I talk in my book about warrior poet manhood, it's something actually my husband coined that phrase, and he got it from the book Scottish Chiefs, which is about the life of William Wallace.
Braveheart.
Yeah,
Braveheart, exactly, and how William Wallace was like this picture of a warrior and a poet, the combination of this man who had this amazing strength and grit and fight, and yet tenderness and gentleman and sensitive, and so he had this amazing blend of what a man truly should be, and that old style of manhood where honor was held in esteem, and they actually thought about how they would treat a lady and how they would protect and stand up for a lady, that's almost a lost concept in today's world, something that guys make fun of, but it's actually what God intended a man to be.
Well, and girls actually find that more attractive anyways.
Right.
You know, we play into this whole, you know, like you were saying earlier, Leslie, we play into this whole, you know, we don't want men to be too manly, so we make them
right.
girl-like. But then when we see them that way, it's like, wait, what happened to all the men? Where
right.
did they go?
Exactly.
And one thing I love, you're talking about the warrior poet manhood, which I let me just say, I read the whole book this in like the last 3 days, and I couldn't put it down. It was awesome.
Well, thank you.
Really, just the way it breaks everything down. And one of the things that I love that it said about this warrior poet manhood, it says, the mark of a warrior poet does not lie in his perfection, but in the direction of his life.
Right.
So, I mean, before we go any further with this, just if there are any guys listening, hopefully there are guys listening.
Right.
Just that they would know and be encouraged by that it's not about becoming, you know,
yes.
or it's not about being a perfect
right.
man, because none of us are perfect. We all have
exactly.
Areas that we struggle in and stuff like that. But we should not, and again, your book goes into this, we shouldn't fall into that, well, everybody's like this, so I guess there's no way out of it.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a really, really key point, because, you know, girls ask me all the time, it's like, well, you know, if I don't see a warrior poet guy out there, do I expect this picture-perfect man that's exactly like William Wallace in Braveheart, or do I picture this Prince Charming guy who never makes a mistake? And the likelihood of finding a guy like that is pretty small. But a guy who actually esteems honor and esteems warrior poet manhood and has his life aimed towards these things and is headed in that direction, whether or not he's reached the pinnacle of perfection, which he probably never will, that's really the test. And to find a guy who doesn't just devalue women and treat them as sex objects and live for himself, but a guy who truly will lay down his life for a woman and truly will protect purity rather than try to conquer it. That's the type of man that a woman should hold out for. And if she doesn't see a man like that, not to settle for less, but to continue to inspire the men in her life towards something better.
You know, a guy who actually writes a lot of books that kind of captures, I think, pretty perfectly this whole warrior poet mentality is actually Stephen Lawhead. I don't know if either of you guys have read him. He did a series, the Pendragon series, which was a retelling of the Arthur legends. And the great thing about the way Lawhead writes is he writes all these characters as Christians. They're all godly men. So not only are, you know, the romanticized idea of, you know, knights in shining armor, but they actually have a passion and a love for Christ Jesus. And so he retells the legends of Arthur. He's told the story of St. Patrick. He's doing a series right now on Robin Hood. And in all of them, he really captures the essence of what I think you guys are talking about. And it's actually, I started reading those back when I was in high school is when I first came across Lawhead. And I've been reading them ever since. And they've always been an inspiration for me.
Wow.
I know some people are like, no, you're supposed to be inspired by the Bible. Well, the Bible is inspiring to me, no doubt. But I have to admit, the characters that Lawhead writes have always inspired me. I want to be a dude like that. And so if you ever get a chance, either one of you, to check it out, Lawhead does a great job in capturing that, especially capturing it in a way where it's a guy who has a heart for the Lord. And that's what I love about his work. I'm really excited because Tuck, the third part of his new Robin Hood trilogy, coming out the spring or the summer. I don't know. I keep checking. And, yeah, I keep emailing him. Hey, man, when's your new book coming out? He's like, do I know you? It's like, no, I'm just a fan. 1-866-730-4921. If anyone would like to call in and ask a question, if you've been dealing with some of these issues, yeah, we've been getting a lot of questions, actually. Dear DJ, that kind of goes right into this topic. We even had one question with someone saying, I can't find the right person. I don't see him around here. What would I do? And you know, that's exactly what we're talking about tonight. And actually, Leslie, this might play into it as well. I came across a question on Dear DJ that I tried to answer. Dear DJ is like our Dear Abby column that we do here at M88. But one of the things was a guy wrote in, and he said, I don't get it. I try to be this kind of guy that you guys have mentioned. I think it was when we did the dating show, right, Mandy, and it was after that we got this question. He says, and you know, I try to be that kind of guy, the kind of guy you were talking about, but the girls I know, they either make fun of me, they mock me, they ignore me, or they don't want to have anything to do with me because they think I'm some sort of weirdo, who's trying to behave this way. What am I supposed to do? Because it seems like women don't really want that, which I thought was a fair question, because I've seen that as well. You know, how would you respond to that, Leslie?
Yeah, I think it's an excellent question. My husband and I were having dinner with a group of young men not long ago, and a guy at the table, a single guy, was saying the exact same thing. He said, you know, women in our culture have so labeled guys and so pigeonholed them that they are only interested in one thing, and they're just these idiotic cavemen that are led by their sex drives, that they don't, if a guy ever lives according to a different standard, a girl either doesn't believe him, thinks he has ulterior motives, or just doesn't know how to react to it and makes fun of him, mocks him. And I think women have bought into that problem, or they are contributing to the problem, because they're not allowing guys to rise up and be these heroic men. They've become very sarcastic. I should include myself in that. We, as a group, have become very sarcastic toward men. And, you know, I heard a girl say the other day, as a guy was lifting something, like lifting a heavy box, she was like, oh, the only thing that men are good for, lifting heavy things.
Oh, yeah.
Just little comments like that are so normal in our culture, so acceptable. Whereas if a guy, you know, said something similar about a girl, he would get eaten alive. But for girls, it's totally acceptable to put down guys constantly and treat them as if they're, you know, scum. And so I think it does put guys in a really difficult position, trying to hold to that standard. And really the advice that Eric and I gave to this young man was to just continue to be consistent and to not let his motives be to get the girls to approve of him, but to do it as unto the Lord, as unto Christ, and to eventually a girl, the girl that God has for him, or girls that are mature enough to see what's really going on, will appreciate what he's doing. But guys do have an uphill battle, because the attitude that women have allowed to creep in is very demeaning towards guys. And I do talk about that in the book, women becoming, you know, sarcastic, arrogant, controlling, nagging, manipulative. I mean, we've resorted to all kinds of tactics to sort of lash out at guys around us, and none of them are the way that Christ wants us to respond to the situation.
Right, definitely. You know, here's a question for you.
Okay.
Just put
me on the spot.
All right.
I'm ready. Bring it on.
Okay. Going over just some of the things that Leslie and I are talking about, you know, with girls and how our response to guys has been, whether it's through sarcasm or just really just putting guys down. Would you say that is probably the hardest thing about being a godly man, or are there other things that played into that? As a guy who, I mean, I've heard stories about, you know, when you were younger and even now, how you view women and your daughters and how you hold them in high esteem. What is the hardest part, really, about being a godly man?
I think the hardest part about being a godly man is that there aren't very many people who are able to define it really well. We don't really talk about it in youth group. We tell kids to, you know, avoid sex, avoid drinking and drugs, and be a good citizen, be a good person. But you don't hear a lot of talk about what it means to be a godly man. You hear people say, you need to be like David. Okay, what does that mean?
What does that mean?
You're a man after God's own heart. Nice.
What does that mean?
What does that mean?
Right.
We have all these pat phrases that we throw out at guys, but you don't really see or hear a lot of explanation as to what mm-hmm. that means.
Yeah.
And so much so that, like I mentioned, I ended up turning to fiction to find a good example of it. Stephen Lawhead and the things that he wrote, they resonated with me, and that's when it clicked for me. It's like, oh, now I get it. This is the type of dude. And, you know, these guys weren't perfect, as you were saying, Leslie. You know, the guys in Lawhead's stories, they fail sometimes. Sometimes their emotions get the best of them. Sometimes they are brutal in battle. Sometimes they let their lust get the best of them. But they always are moving forward in a direction to serve the greater kingdom of God.
Yeah.
And at the same time, when they do find the woman of their dreams, they were passionate. They were even sensual. They gave everything for the woman that they loved, you know, and it was all the things I was like, oh, now I get it. How weird, though, that I had to turn to fiction to figure out what it really meant to be a godly man. And I will never forget that development phase of my life, because the sad thing is I did not find it in the church. I heard a lot of the catchphrases from the church, but no one ever really explained anything in any sort of substantial way.
Yeah, my husband Eric said the exact same thing.
Sweet, we're both smart guys then.
He just struggled his whole life saying, I don't see any examples of this. No one's defined it for me. I know that I'm supposed to live according to a higher standard. What is that standard? And for him, it was the book Scottish Chiefs by Jane Porter, which I talked about earlier, but that's the book that inspired the movie Braveheart, but about the life of William Wallace, and it portrayed this man's life. Even quite a bit different than the way he was portrayed in the movie, even though the movie portrayed him well, but this book kind of took that concept of honor and dignity to a whole new level. And when Eric read about his life, which was based on a true story, but a lot of it was romanticized and fictionalized, it painted that picture for him of, this is what true manhood is. This is what I want to aspire to be. And we are in desperate need of examples like that for the young men that are growing up in our culture. And unfortunately, they're just not seeing it, and it's not being modeled for them.
Yeah.
Now, what I was intrigued by, and this is something that Mandy, we were talking about, was how you were saying that women could play a role in helping inspire and help men achieve this goal of being the warrior poet that they're supposed to be. And I'll be honest, when I read that, I was thinking, come on, get out of here. How are they supposed to do that? I don't get it. And
right.
I'll be honest, it still is kind of confusing to me. Although, I will say this, I know that my wife has certainly helped me do that.
Yeah.
But, you know, beyond that, you know, I'm thinking, you know, the female population at large, how are they supposed to contribute? Yeah, sure, when you find the right woman to marry, well, obviously they should play a role in that. But I didn't get the rest of it. It's like, okay, aside from marriage, how is that supposed to happen?
Yeah. Well, that's a really good question. And I think just as women are often contributors to the problems, you know, they complain about guys being a certain way. They try to make them more like girls, and they end up with metro manhood, where they, you know, they complain and get sarcastic about a guy being a sexual caveman, and then guys are never able to rise above that because the woman has labeled and pigeonholed him. Just as women can have a negative influence on the way that men act and think, they can also have a positive influence on the way that men act and think, and it's certainly not completely in our control. But the way that we conduct ourselves, the way that we think and act and treat men, can have a huge impact and can be an inspiration, I think, on how a man chooses to live his life. And some of the practical things I talk about in the book, you know, we kind of know the wrong ways to do it. A lot of us have heard about the dangers of being manipulative and being seductive and being controlling and being arrogant as a woman towards guys. But what are we supposed to do? We're so frustrated with how men are. What can we do with guys in our life that aren't living according to the standard of Christ? And a lot of it boils down to, how are we living? How are we acting? As opposed to always trying to, you know, point the finger at guys and say, they need to change, they need to do this, they need to do that. looking back, you know, with a prayerful heart at our own attitudes and actions and saying, am I actually helping or am I hindering, guys? And so some of the practical things I talk about in the book, there's a whole list of them, but, you know, in motivating a guy to rise up to that standard of honor has a lot to do with how a young woman conducts herself, how she dresses, how she talks, how she carries herself. I was sitting in a coffee shop the other day and just listening to this Christian college girl talking to a casual male acquaintance of hers. And she was sitting on this chair, just sort of slouched in her seat, dangling her legs in a very unfeminine way off the stool, using crass language, gossiping about other people, kind of acting, you know, a little bit gross and, you know, careless in her attitude and saying, you know, just saying things that were pretty awkward. And it was totally normal, but as I was thinking about this idea of a woman becoming a true lady, you know, when a woman acts crass and crude and doesn't guard her femininity and doesn't portray herself like a lady, it doesn't really motivate a guy to be honorable and to be protective and to be a true gentleman. But when a woman carries herself with decorum and she guards her mystique and she carries herself with dignity and she dresses and acts like a lady, it sort of makes a guy straighten up and take notice and say, hey, this is attractive to me. How can I esteem this and honor this and protect this and stand up for this? But unfortunately, a lot of girls have lost the idea of what it means to dress and act with dignity towards a guy, and they've lost that decorum in their conduct towards men. And so that's one thing that I go into a lot in the book, is how by becoming true women of God, we can inspire men to become true men of God, because they're motivated to protect that and to honor that and to esteem that. I talk about the way a young woman dresses. You know, a lot of girls complain about men treating them like sex objects and guys, you know, yelling out of car windows at them, but they're sitting there in a miniskirt or, you know, a really tight halter top or something. They don't understand that, you know, they're complaining about being treated like a sex object, but they're dressing like a sex object. So looking at the way that we dress and understanding that the way we dress can either turn a guy's attention towards Christ or towards seductive, our body and being, you know, seductive towards a guy and pulling his standards lower than we really want it to be. And a lot of other things, like, you know, women taking the initiative in relationships and even in friendships. You know, so many married women complain that their husband is not the leader of the home. The husband doesn't take that role of guiding the family. But in the very, very beginning of the relationship, the woman was the one who pursued the guy. And then she suddenly wants him to rise up and be the one to pursue her. Well, it doesn't really work that way. You have to do it according to God's pattern and lay the right foundation. So understanding how to let a guy be a guy, let him rise up and be the man that God has created him to be, and keeping your standards high. You know, a lot of young men that I've talked to said, you know, if girls would just keep their standards high and not just throw themselves at one guy after the next and come off as so desperate, it would force guys to have to work a little harder to win a woman's heart and show honor. But girls come across as just so casual and careless with their hearts and their bodies, and they come across as desperate, and it doesn't make a guy work very hard to win their heart. So just a lot of practical things in daily life and the way a girl acts and thinks towards a guy can really make a difference in the standard that he lives by. You know, obviously we haven't even talked about, you know, prayer and what a difference praying for the men in your life can be. When you see guys in your life that you're sort of wishing that they would live according to a higher standard, to pray for them and to believe that God wants to do something and can do something amazing in their life, and to continue to motivate them towards that standard in every practical way that you can.
Right, and that includes brothers and fathers as well.
Right, and I talk about that in the book too, because a lot of us overlook that as sisters and as daughters, we can influence our brothers and our dads, and that's actually a very safe place to start, because they're not going to, there's nothing sexual involved there, but it's just guys in your life that you can, you know, when you see them, one of the things I talk about, especially with sisters, to tell their brothers, when you see your brother doing something noble or heroic, even if it's really small, even if it's not something that's that big of a deal, to go out of your way to notice that and appreciate that and say, wow, what you just did was really great, and I think we need guys that act that way more, and just to really point out that kind of behavior, and for a young man to hear that from his sister, it will go a long way in helping, you know, shape his attitudes and make him want to be that way even more.
Definitely. Well, 866-730-4921. You can call in from anywhere, ask us your questions, give us your comments. Right now we have Chris on the line. Chris, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you guys?
Doing very good. Thanks.
Good. Well, this actually kind of just went with some stuff I was dealing with today. Being a man of God and stuff and really letting God take control of your life as a man. And I just wanted to reach out to all the guys out there and say, you know, that we as guys, we need to allow Christ and God to really control our lives, that we need to not, you know, really do anything except rely on God and have him show us who we are to marry, what we are, how we are to act as Christians. And, you know, it's not much about pleasing the girls. It's about pleasing God.
That's awesome. That's a very good point. And that's actually something mm-hmm. Leslie talks about in her book as well, not only for guys, but for women as well. Because mm-hmm. Leslie, as you pointed out in your book, when you can really step back and make God the number one love in your life, then
right.
when the love here on earth comes, it just makes it even more special. And so, Chris, that applies
yeah.
to guys, and I can see you really just have a heart for that and reaching other guys with that. I'm really glad that you called in. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
It's such a good point, too, because, you know, the only way that a man truly can become the man of a woman's dreams is to surrender his life to Christ and allow the Spirit of God to do that work in him. And that is really where it all begins. So I think, a guy who doesn't know God or isn't allowing God to overtake his life can only get so far in his own strength. But in the end, to truly become the man that God created you to be, it has to be a work of God's Spirit within you. So it's absolutely a foundation. I agree.
1-866-730-4921 if you'd like to call in and offer a comment like Chris did, which was, hey, Chris, I echo that, absolutely. 1-866-730-4921 if you'd like to call in tonight.
All right, well, Leslie, I want to kind of dive in. It's a very similar topic to what Chris was talking about, and he okay. kind of touched on this as far as really just stepping back and making God the number one priority in your life.
Yeah.
Now, here's a question, and this is a question that I've actually been asked a lot lately, and I've heard circulating around, you know, whether it's mid-school girls or guys or...
Yeah.
The question is, at what point, or maybe not at what point, but really, when you've stepped back and you've been in pursuit of God and allowed God to pursue you, and he is the number one love in your life, what happens when that person does come along?
Mm.
And really, what are the steps in that? I know we talked about dating a few weeks back, but for girls, let's touch on girls specifically.
Yeah,
we're not supposed to be the pursuers. We know
right.
that. But what do we do? I mean,
yeah.
how do we? I've heard some people say, "Well, you're not supposed to pursue, but you just kind of, you know, you just kind of get in his way. You just kind of
right.
stand in front of him and hope he notices you." Really, but are there practical ways to do that? Are there biblical and godly ways to go about doing that?
Yeah. Well, it's a really good question, and it's actually a source of debate in the Christian circles right now. There's some books that have come out recently which really encourage girls to be pretty aggressive in their pursuit of guys. And it's cloaked, in my opinion, it's not biblical. It's cloaked in biblical-sounding advice. But it sort of takes out that element of absolute trust and dependence on God and sort of subtly puts the issue back into your hands and into your control as a young woman. And the books that have come out, they wouldn't call it How to Manipulate a Guy, but that's really what it is without calling it manipulation. I think it's so easy for a girl to do that. It's so easy for her to, as we would say in our book, When God Writes Your Love Story, take that pen in her own hands and try to script her own story. And I think because girls don't see true men very often, when a guy does come along that is a potential husband, it can create this desperation, like, oh, I've got to do something right now because this might be my only chance. This might be the only guy I'll ever meet. And if I don't just, you know, get in his path and get in his face and let him know that I'm interested, it'll fall through my, you know, it'll slip through my fingers and I won't ever have this opportunity again. As opposed to immediately saying, okay, God, if you have brought this person into my life, if you have a plan for this relationship, I'm going to let you script the story. And I want you to be the one in control and not me. I don't want to manipulate. I don't want to rush ahead of you. And so some of the things that, you know, that doesn't mean that you hide in your room and you never, you know, enter into a conversation with this person and you just kind of wait for them to have a divine revelation of where you live and show up on your doorstep. But at the same time, to be very cautious about becoming obsessed and becoming driven by your attraction to this person, and to really trust God with all of your heart in this situation. But to, and some of the things I wrote about in the book, one of the ways that you can tell whether even a friendship is from God or is headed in the right direction, I always go back to a quote that my dad said to Eric when we were kind of in our, right before we got engaged, and our relationship was kind of shifting from friendship into romantic relationship. And my dad said this to Eric, that the way that he could tell that God had brought Eric into my life was because ever since Eric came into my life, I had drawn closer to Jesus Christ as a result of the friendship. And it's such a great test, because if a friendship or a relationship is in your life and you feel like it distracts you from your relationship with Christ, it pulls you away from your times with Him and your focus on Him, then that's a sign that something's out of whack. It could be the right person, but the wrong time and the wrong structure to the relationship. But if anything distracts you from your relationship with Christ, or causes Christ to take a back burner, that's something that doesn't belong in your life, at least in its current form. But if something is literally drawing you closer to Jesus Christ and enhancing your relationship with Him, that's just a great way to tell that it's something that God is knitting together. And every time I would spend time with Eric, before we were even in a romantic relationship, I would walk away from that time thinking not more about Eric Luty and how great he was, but more about my relationship with Christ. He would challenge me, he would inspire me, he would motivate me, he would motivate me to pray more, to study God's Word more, and that was exactly the fruit in my life. So to really look at the fruit and look at how it affects your relationship with Christ, and if it is something that draws you closer to Jesus Christ, to really allow Him, to trust Him enough to work in the guy's heart, that if he wants this relationship to happen, that the guy can take the first step. That doesn't mean that, you know, having a friendly conversation or reaching out to a guy in a appropriate way is bad, but so many girls really feel that impatience and that urgency that if I don't call him, if I don't let him know how I feel, if I don't invite him out to coffee, if I don't get this thing going, it's never going to happen. And I had a friend a couple years ago who had a guy in her life that she felt really strongly was the right one for her, and that God had brought him into her life. And she asked me, she said, he's not initiating anything, that we have a great friendship, but he's not taking it to the next step. Should I talk to him? Should I just lay it down, lay it on the line and say, hey, I feel this way. How do you feel? And, you know, I said, I really think that if you just pray and trust God, that if it's supposed to happen, this guy will be the one to initiate that conversation, and he will respect you so much more if you wait and let him do it. And so she waited like a whole nother year before he said anything. And a lot of times she would email me and say, okay, are you sure about this waiting thing? Because I really am getting impatient here. And finally, after a year, he sat down with her and he said, I want to share with you that God has really drawn my heart to you, and I want to pursue you for something beyond friendship. And I so respect you for letting me be the one to initiate this conversation. And he has always treated her since then with such amazing respect and tenderness because she allowed him to take that step. And it was really an issue for her of trust, trusting God to work in this guy's heart as opposed to taking the pen into her own hands and trying to script it. So that's something that I really encourage a lot of girls, you know, when that guy has come along. And then to really recruit teammates, people in your life that can walk this out with you and pray with you and kind of counsel you and be accountability partners with you. A lot of times for young people, the best teammates you could possibly recruit would be your parents, because they love you, they want the best for you. A lot of times they have a special insight and intuition into your life because they're your parents. And as hard as it is to invite them into this area of your life, it's invaluable to have their wisdom and their opinion. And a lot of times they can see when there needs to be a caution, and a lot of times they can see when God really is doing something. My parents were a really key part of my relationship with Eric, and they were the ones, you know, they even saw before I did that this is something that God was scripting. And just to have their confidence and their assurance that they felt really good about where this was going was just amazing. It was just such a great foundation to the relationship. So to really just continue to keep God at the center of your life and not, you know, shift everything around and make this guy that has now come into your life the total focus of your existence, but to keep Christ at the center, that is the big challenge for a young woman in that situation.
Well, 1-866-730-4921. If you'd like to call in, ask a question, share a comment, please do so. This is a good time to do that. Like I said, we've gotten, I think the bulk of the questions that we've gotten at Dear DJ have been relational in nature, like 85% of them. So here's a great chance to ask those questions and get some answers. 1-866-730-4921. And if you don't mind me saying so, you know, my wife didn't make it easy for me at all. She actually tried to get rid of me a few times because she was trying to do what you were saying, Leslie, focus on God. And but for whatever reason, I wasn't willing to give up. And I pursued her with all of my heart, and it was not an easy pursuit, but so well worth it.
Yeah.
And I absolutely agree. And I don't think I've ever thought of it in these terms before until I was listening to you talk tonight, but I think you're absolutely right. When you have pursued something so diligently, something that you thought was just so worth pursuing and treasured so much that you were willing to give your all to go after it, you're going to take good care of it and protect it. And that's exactly the way I feel about my wife.
Yeah,
it was hard work, but you know what? It was worth it, and I will never change that opinion. We're coming up on our 10th wedding anniversary, and I keep telling her, I was like, I don't know. By 10, you know, our culture says things are supposed to be, you know, like in the blah, 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 blah. And I keep feeling like, man, we're still the same kids that got married. So
we're doing
something wrong or we're doing something right, but whatever it is, I like it.
That is great. So romantic, and I think that is what women truly want and desire out of their marriage. And the way that you handle it in the beginning, just like your wife did, is crucial to laying that foundation. I say that exact same thing in the book, that if you challenge a guy and let him win your heart, he's going to be far more likely to cherish and protect that gift, that rather than to just take it lightly and treat it carelessly. And so women who desire that fairy tale, it may be hard to be patient, but it's worth it in the end.
Yeah, I feel kind of like Smaug guarding all the gold and the Hobbit. That's my geek reference for tonight.
Good times.
Thank you.
You had to throw that in there.
I did. I'm sorry. I couldn't help it.
You know, and Yo and Leslie, this is something that I've noticed with both of you guys, and also just, you know, I'll go into a little bit of my story here in just a little bit. But with both of you guys, I've noticed just like that waiting process and that prayer process that had to occur before the relationship began and even after the relationship began in the earlier stage. And both of you guys are married. And just being able to see it. Leslie, one thing you talk about, again, going back to your book, is that fairy tale that every girl has always dreamed of. You know, every girl wants to play princess and have the prince come get her and, you know, rescue her and take her to his castle and all that. And that's such a neglected idea nowadays, or even looked down upon idea nowadays.
Yeah.
And it's really sad to me. But one of the coolest things for me that I've seen in both of your guys' relationships, and then just really in some of the most romantic love stories that I've ever seen, real ones that I know the people involved have been, where there was a time of waiting. And I know for me, there was you know, a year in which I had to step back and just spend time in prayer. And I prayed for my future husband, and just, you know, that there would be specific qualities about him, godly qualities about him, that just, you know, fell into place. And so, you know, that's really important.
Is that him sitting out there?
Yes.
Right outside the window there?
Yes, it is.
The one that's turning all red now and blushing?
Yeah, Eric. Actually, yeah, another Eric, but he's outside. But yeah, he fits all those qualities. Really, and that was one of the most beautiful things to me, is to be able to see God answer prayer requests specifically, and through other things. There were other things involved. There were specific prayer requests that I had for learning how to play guitar, and he fell into that, which was really interesting to see how God took two prayer requests and threw them together.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's so beautiful to me to see that in different relationships, and really just as an encouragement for girls, because that's such a neglected idea now, that is there, and that is what God designed for us, for women who were in pursuit after God, that we would be able to have that love story that didn't just fall into worldly standards.
Yeah, I always talk about the story of my sister-in-law, who was 34 before she met the man that she was going to marry. And all through her 20s and early 30s, I mean, people pressured her and said, you really need to be more aggressive towards guys. You And she just felt like, you know, I need to pray, I need to wait, I need to trust God. And until that guy comes along, I'm not going to just throw myself at any random guy just to have a guy. I want to wait for a man who truly resembles Christ. And she was living in a very obscure small town, and people said, you're never going to meet a guy here. There's no one under the age of 70 that's even single that lives here. And that was where she met him. God brought this man into her life out of the woodwork without her having to manipulate anything or do anything, and answered very, very specific things that she had been praying for 15 years. And on her wedding day, it was just the most amazing thing to see her walk down the aisle, because we knew how much she had waited and how patient she had been and how sacrificial her life had been to not just settle for all the things that the world was enticing her with and all the things people pressured her to go after, but to make Christ her all in all and to just pray and trust and wait and then let God write this amazing story. And it was just probably the most incredible wedding that we've ever seen because of the waiting and the prayer and the trust that had gone into it.
All right, I have a question for both of you, because this has been something that just kind of bugs me, okay? When it comes to our culture and even how the culture the culture that surrounds us has leaked into the church, when it comes to something that we've touched on, but I think we should really focus on here for a moment, is the way women dress. You know, our culture very much gives this image that all women need to be really super sexy. You know, the way they market it to young kids. I mean, I remember a couple of years ago, there was like a 12-year-old who was furious because she couldn't find modest clothes at a clothing store. And she did like a big protest and wrote these letters. And eventually, she changed the mind of the store. Very cool. But here's why I'm complaining about this, all right? All women, listen up. It's not fair, okay? Because, unfortunately, as a guy, we have a really hard time resisting that. And, you know, you can say, oh, well, that's because all men are pigs or whatever. You know, I'm sorry. Guys are visually programmed. That's right. The way we're programmed. Now, we have a responsibility to make sure that we don't let that run away with itself. Absolutely. We need to be responsible for what we look at and how we are drawn when it comes to anything that looks sexy and incites our lust. Absolutely, we have a responsibility. But it is still not fair that women seem to get away with it without even have to think about it, and we're always the one that's at fault. You know,
right.
Because I'll be honest, as a guy, I struggle with being visually stimulated. Mm-hmm. It's just something that happens, and I hate it because I don't want that to happen with anyone except my wife. And I'm always very honest with her. I say, you know, sweetie, I'm sorry. I had a bad day today. I saw some things, and it was not cool. And please forgive me. But let me also say, girls, it's just not fair when you're just prancing around and not thinking about it. And then when a guy reacts the way that naturally he's programmed to react, and suddenly, oh, can't believe guys. They only think about one thing. They're such pigs.
When they're wearing mini skirts and, you know, crop tops.
Whatever, you know. And that's like an extreme. But there's even in the church, you know, like, well, it's okay because we're more modest. And I'm like, man, modesty has changed a lot in the past 20 years because I don't know. You know, and I don't think it's fair to think that guys should constantly look at the ground everywhere they walk. Because if we did that, there would be an increase in head injuries because we wouldn't be able to see where we're going. And quite frankly, our overtaxed medical system couldn't handle all that. And it would just throw the whole economy even into worse affairs. So all I'm saying is it's not fair. And why is it that that guys are always at blame for this, reacting this way? And how much do you think the culture is influencing even the way Christians dress?
Yeah, I totally agree with what you're saying, and I do see so many girls, like I said, complain about guys treating them as sex objects as they walk off in a halter top and a mini skirt, and not seeing the double standard, you know.
Yeah.
Guys, to treat them like a lady, but they don't dress like a lady. They don't act like a lady. They act like a sex object, and then they get mad that they're treated that way. So it's a huge issue for girls, and I think because the standard in the culture keeps dropping so dismally low, the standard in the church keeps dropping dismally low. We kind of keep our standards maybe, you know, a little bit better than Paris Hilton or whatever's popular out there, but it's compared to what it was 20, 30, 50 years ago, it just continues to plummet to the point where there is such little standard. And I interviewed a lot of young godly guys for this book, and they said, you know, that is one of the primary things that young women could do to help guys aspire to a higher standard. It's just a very, very practical area. Is not constantly cause guys to stumble with the way that they dress. And one of the guys said, you know, I'm a youth pastor, and I would say that 90% of the girls in my youth group, even when it's freezing cold outside, they wear, you know, barely any clothing, because that's just what's normal, that's what's acceptable, and just because they're a little bit better than, you know, what's on TV, they think that they're being modest. And it's just a continual problem that we face in our culture. So I think what I go into this in pretty great detail in the book of just, you know, it's one thing to guard your heart and guard your mind and keep your standards and your commitments high for your future husband. But if you're walking around allowing any random guy who happens to see you to see things and to think things that should only be for your future husband, that's chipping away at your purity, just like giving your heart or your body in a relationship would. And so we talk very practically in the book about what does it mean to truly dress in a way that honors guys. And it comes down to an issue of selflessness. If you want to dress selfishly, then you're going to dress in a way that constantly puts guys in a difficult position. You may get a lot of attention from the opposite sex, but you're getting the wrong kind of attention, and you're drawing attention to yourself and not to Jesus Christ, and you're drawing attention to the wrong part of yourself. And what does it mean to be selfless and sacrificial in the way that you dress? To draw attention to your eyes and your smile and the inner beauty that Christ has worked in you, instead of the outline of your body or the skin that you want to show. And it's hard for girls because, like you said about the 12-year-old girl, there's not a lot of modest clothing options out there. It's really an art form these days to dress stylishly and modestly at the same time. But any young woman who sets her mind to do it, it's possible. But it's a huge way that we can help guys and honor guys.
Yeah, for sure. And here's why I say it's not fair, all right? Because whenever that happens, I'm the one who ends up feeling bad. I'm the one who ends up feeling like I've dishonored my wife. I'm the one who ends up having to go to her and to my Lord to repent and ask for forgiveness. And I don't know if women are either unaware or they are aware, but they just don't care of the power that has over a man. And, okay, so we're so feeble-minded that we can fall to that power. Whatever. It's still not fair. And quite frankly, it's damaging to a guy's relationship with his wife and with our God when we constantly have to struggle with this.
You know, and more often than not, I think it's the latter of the two that you were talking about. I think that, and I know because I was one of them, I will fess up to that on air right now. I used to be one of the girls who would really just dress to attract.
I'm glad I didn't work with you back then.
Well, I wasn't working here back then.
That's good.
No, but really, because I think that we throw out the excuse of, well, I'm not the one thinking the thoughts. He should,
right,
you know, guard his mind.
That's
but
a bunch of malarkey.
It is. And that's, you know, I had to come to the point in my relationship with God that I started looking at it so negatively that, heck, now if somebody jokes with me about maybe something I'm wearing being inappropriate, that goes in the trash. That's just, I had to bring myself to that position where I was able to do that, because it has to be selfless. And there's actually a verse in 1 Peter 1:22 that I read earlier today. It says, "Since you have purified your souls in obeying the truth through the Spirit, in sincere love of the brethren, love one another fervently with a pure heart." Mm-hmm. It's out of love.
Right.
And for Christian women, now, I mean, there's really not a whole lot we can do about women who are not believers, which is why, you know, even when my boyfriend Eric and I are walking through the mall, I have to take his hand and guard him through the section as he looks down where there's Victoria's Secret and Sephora and Frederick's all right next to each other.
Yeah, I have that same problem.
And so
I've run into a few things.
As
head wounds.
Yeah, exactly. So as Christian women, not only are we to, you know, cover our brothers and fathers' eyes if they're walking by something that we feel like they might stumble against, or even not lead them in that direction. But as Christian women, we should also be selfless enough, mm-hmm, out of our love for them and our love for God, that we aren't going to dress something. If they mention, yeah, that kind of makes me uncomfortable. Or if we see them give us a look, that's a big thing. There are a lot of guys who are not going to say a thing because either they're embarrassed about it,
right,
or they don't want to come across as a pig, because that's automatically
or they
what they're
feel labeled. Bad about it.
Yeah,
right.
they feel bad about
it. It's
about
a natural reaction, but we feel bad about
right.
it.
Right. And so because of that, I know that there are times when I'll catch a look from somebody, and it's like, okay, What provoked that?
Mm-hmm.
Especially if it's from a godly man. If it's not from a godly man, you know, ladies, sometimes there's nothing you can do about the looks.
Some guys are pigs.
Exactly. And, you know, that's just how it is. Just like there are non-believing women who are pigs as well. That's just...
There's another word for it, but we're not going to use it on this show.
No.
We're not that raw.
Yeah. So really, I mean, there's nothing we can do about non-believers. We cannot hold them to the same standard mm-hmm. as believers. But for Christian women and Christian men, we should love each other as brothers and sisters, not as, I'm going to be modest so that I attract a really cute guy.
Yeah.
No. We should not be doing it because we want, you know, we want this man, therefore we're going to do this to get this man. But we should be acting in this way because we have a God who died for us.
Yeah.
And we're expected to live to a certain standard. No, there's no perfection. But what is that direction?
Yeah,
what is
exactly.
that direction that we're heading
One of the
in?
Favorite things my wife does for me is, like, if a Victoria's Secret commercial comes on or something while I'm watching TV, she'll give me a nice passionate kiss. So, you know, I'm totally distracted. And then, you know, when the commercial's over, like, what just happened? Oh, wow. Okay. What show are we watching? That's sweet. I missed all the commercials. It's better than DVR. Well, we got about 5 minutes left, Leslie. So, and we covered a lot of ground. I have to say, you know, your book, Answering the Guy Question.
Awesome book.
Yeah, you know, I was
awesome
looking
book.
At it, and I was like, well, that's a pretty thin book. But, of course, it's answering the guy question. I mean, how much is there to answer? So, of course, it's going to be thin. I mean, otherwise, you'd have to start making stuff up to pad it. Like, okay, answering the guy questions. They're shallow. And then they're like all these. But I'm glad you touched on a lot of really, really good stuff. Actually, funny story. One of the things that me and my wife had to do early on is she had to learn to trust me when she asked me what I was thinking about. And that when I said
yep.
nothing, I literally was thinking nothing.
You guys actually knew nothing. Yeah. We've had that talk.
Yeah, you know, she had a hard time with that. But the moment she realized it was one time when she, you know, I want to be transparent with my wife. I will be perfectly honest with her, and I just, you know, hope that she'll believe me. So one time she asked me, what are you thinking about? And I said, well, I'm thinking about whether or not the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles could defeat Superman. Because, you know, Superman is Superman, and he's invincible, but there's four Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And Batman often beats Superman, even though he doesn't have any powers. He's a smart guy. Well, Donatello's pretty smart, and he has three other turtles to help him out. So I'm thinking maybe under the right circumstances, the turtles could beat Superman. And to her credit, this was like a turning point in our relationship. To her credit, she didn't laugh, she didn't go, that's the dumbest thing I ever heard, or what are you really thinking about? You're really thinking about what's going on? Is there something wrong with the relationship? Didn't freak out like that or anything. She just said, oh, well, that's very interesting, and, you know, moved on. And so that was a turning point for us when she realized sometimes that's just what a guy thinks
about.
Of course,
about. If anybody sees Yo's office, they know that he is not lying.
They would know that.
Her
I would not
action
make,
figures galore.
I would not make something like that up. But before we wrap things up, Leslie, why don't you tell everybody where they can find out more about you, remind them of their website, and where they can find out more about your really good book, Answering the Guy Question.
Oh, thank you. Well, yeah, setapartgirl.com. It's all one word. No dashes, setapartgirl.com is our website, and I have we have an online magazine that we have on the, every month with articles just about a lot of these issues, just going into it in a real practical detail of what does it look like to relate to guys in a godly way, and what does it look like to dress modestly in a way that honors guys, and have a lot of blogs and podcasts and other things that can just really encourage any young woman that wants to take this deeper in her life. And the book, Answering the Guy Questions, definitely geared for, you know, young unmarried women. I'm sure it'd be a lot thicker book if it was marriage relationship advice, but I'm not quite there yet. So just a lot of the questions that girls have asked me over the past 10 years of being in ministries, just really try to tackle straight on in this book. And it's an easy read. That's one of the reasons I like it being short, is you can kind of sit down and read it in a few days.
Oh, so that's why it's short, not because it's about guys, but because it's, I was worried.
Yeah, exactly. So, in fact, I think girls would probably like it to be a little longer. This is definitely a favorite topic among this age group.
That's a good one.
So you can order the book at the website or Amazon or any Christian bookstore, but I hope that young women who desire this in their life will come and visit me at the website.
And Leslie, one more thing right before we go. Are there any resources or a website that guys can go to specifically? Because I know this is geared towards women. Is there? Because I know Eric had written some books as well.
Yeah, my husband has a book which he's always kind of embarrassed by the title, but it's called God's Gift to Women. And he didn't pick the title, the publisher picked it. But it's basically about what a guy can do to become this warrior poet man. Basically, the subtitle is Unearthing Warrior Poet Manhood. And so it's called God's Gift to Women. Eric always jokes. He said, okay, guys, this is not my autobiography. I'm not writing that. but you can go to our other website, which is setapartlife.com. My website is setapartgirl.com, and then our ministry website is setapartlife.com. And guys can order a copy of that book. And my husband has a lot of blogs and podcasts, not necessarily just on issues with guys, but his book, The Bravehearted Gospel, is all about bringing the manly stuff back into the church. So he has a lot on the topic of true manhood and inspiring for guys. So I would definitely recommend that. And those fiction books that you were talking about earlier sound great, too. So I'm really interested to check those out. And I have two little boys now. So as they grow older, I'm always looking for those kinds of resources on what true manhood looks like, how I can pass the vision on to them.
Yeah, well, they'll dig it, but wait until they're a little bit older, because there's definitely some bloody battles in there. But
sure.
You know, that's part of what I like about it. Like, I could totally do that. I just don't feel like it right now. Well, Leslie, thank you so much for sharing your time tonight. It's always a pleasure to have you on. Say hi to your husband for us. I had a great time talking to him about the Bravehearted Gospel, and we had a blast and really hit it off. And so we really appreciate all that you guys do.
Oh, thanks so much. It's always great to be here.
All right. Well, thank you, Leslie. The book, Answering the Guy Question, there's actually a lot more to it than you might think, despite the facade that we guys put up of being completely shallow. There's a little bit there underneath the surface, just a little bit. Mandy, nice to have you back on the show.
It was great to be back. I'm refreshed by it.
So good. I'm refreshed that you were here. This would have been a more difficult subject to handle if I would have been the one asking all the questions. So, tell me, Leslie, how can we as women, not we as women,
would have that problem with the Metro Manhood again,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, so fortunately I didn't have to deal with that. Next week we're going to talk a little bit about Lent, fasting, getting ready for Easter. Easter not that far away. So we're going to take a look at this, the whole biblical idea of fasting. What is it? How do you do it? How can we apply it today in a 21st century, because I don't think a lot of people really get that, like fasting. That's a thing they used to do in sackcloth and ashes.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but it's still applicable today. So we're going to take a look at that next week, and then we're going to have the Geislers the following week as we talk about conversational evangelism. How can we, on a daily basis, in very simple ways, share our faith in Christ?
It's a really hard one for a lot of people, I know.
It is a tremendously
hard one.
For good
reason, but it is very difficult.
Well, it's intimidating. It's kind of scary. It's something that we could always use a little help with.
Definitely.
So we'll do that, and that'll take us through the end of the month already. Can you believe that?
That's crazy.
I know.
Easter next month.
I know. That's going to be insane. Well, thanks for joining us, everyone, tonight here on Raw Talk. We appreciate you tuning in, and hope to see you again next week. Just a reminder, if you have more questions, you can always submit those. DearDJ@M88.org. Have a sweet evening in the Lord.
Thanks for joining us on Raw Talk on M88. Get the podcast of tonight's show free at M88.org. And join us again next week for more Raw Talk on M88.